the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yes, we're doing right, thank you, Howard. I was just interested to see that Natan Sharansky, who is the 2020 recipient of the Genesis Prize, $1 million is the prize that each laureate receives. He has decided to donate the million dollar prize to organizations combating coronavirus. That was just made public. Of course, the Genesis Prize has quite a strong South African connection because a former South African philanthropist, business owner, Morris Kahn, also is one of those people who stands behind this prize that is awarded every year to somebody who is given to, it's given to Jewish people who have attained recognition and excellence in their fields, people from around the world, people like Michael Bloomberg, Michael Douglas, Itzhak Perlman, Natalie Portman, Anish Kapoor, Robert Kraft, and in 2020, Natan Sharansky, who has decided to donate the $1 million prize to coronavirus research. So I think that's an interesting little, very nice gesture on his part, for sure.
More than 1 million Israeli school children are returned to school yesterday, and that was part of the lifting of restrictions. Was it everybody, all kids who were allowed to return? How does it work?
So the way that it was structured for yesterday was that only kids in grades 1 to 3 and grades 11 and 12 were due to return to school yesterday. And they're trying to phase it so that at least those kids in grades 11 and 12 can get back to learning in order to prepare themselves for Bagrut exams, for the matriculation exams, which they are due to take during the summer period, during our summer period coming up in the next few months. So at least to get them back to school. And of course, grades 1 to 3, because there's a lot of focus on the younger children getting back to school to allow their parents to get back to work. Obviously, the two are linked very much. As it turns out yesterday, even though the government and the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Education were all cooperating in authorizing the reopening of the schools, the local municipalities, the local municipal authorities, who ultimately are responsible for running the schools, didn't necessarily all agree with that. And as a result of that, the disagreement, something like only 60% of the children who could have returned to school yesterday actually did. And that came as a result of, first of all, some of the local municipalities deciding not to reopen their schools, such as Tel Aviv, for example, decided that they would not reopen their schools yesterday as instructed by the government ministries. And as a result of some parents deciding, even though their schools might be open, that they're not that comfortable about sending their children to the children back to school quite yet. So there's still a lot of consternation, a lot of disagreement, uncertainty about what's okay and what's not okay in this world now, where people are just trying to return back to what used to be normal activity. There is a plan to reopen the schools gradually over the course of the next few weeks to expand this reopening to other grades, not only grades 1 to 3 and, of course, grades 11 and 12. But there is also a lot of focus at the moment on preschool and kindergarten children who still haven't returned to school. And there is talk from the government about them returning to school and their kindergartens and preschools opening already next week. The teachers are not quite as sure about this as the government seems to be. As I've said, there's still a lot of there are many issues that people don't agree with about the manner in which people are returning to school. Apparently, there is supposed to be groups of only up to 15 children to begin with, and everybody's supposed to conduct themselves in a certain manner in order to maintain social distancing and to prevent the possible further infection and spread of this coronavirus. But a lot of the teachers have their concerns about these proposals and the way in which the schools are due to reopen. And so the unions are also getting involved and not necessarily agreeing with what the government is saying. There are many, many disagreements over these issues. But by the time over the course of the next 2 weeks, the plan, the government's plan at least, is that all school children will return to school in some way, shape or form. It might not be 100% hours and everybody going every day, but certainly that all children will somehow be going back to their schools. Along with that, there are plans to reopen shopping malls, to reopen hotels, to reopen markets, to allow people to get to see their parents and grandparents once again, to allow people to mix around with each other. There is also quite a lot of focus about whether museums and libraries and gyms and swimming pools and zoos and other areas of social interaction could be open. There is a plan that by May the 17th, some of those areas will be open. And there is talk of even reopening restaurants and event venues. Some people are suggesting by June the 15th. Others are saying at least the finance ministry is trying to push for that to be by the end of this month already, by May the 31st. So there is now a much more focus on reopening and getting things moving. Of course, there's also talk about whether we can begin to allow flights to take to the air again safely, of course. So that is really the focus right now. The actual infection rate has reduced significantly, and the government has set standards which say that in the event that more than 300 people a day are infected within a certain period of time, that the close down will be reinforced. But at least for now, the infection rates are relatively keeping, you know, below those standards. Really, less than 100 people now considered to be in serious condition, being intubated. Still, a few people continue to have deaths on a daily basis. The latest report suggests that only a couple of deaths were reported yesterday, and of course more and more people now coming out the other side having healed, and of course with the antibodies which people are believe can prevent them from contracting this virus again. There is also some element of disagreement over that. There seems to be disagreement on everything. Right? I don't think that there is a common view on anything. I mean, we're all obliged to go out wearing face masks. Then I see the British Minister of Health announcing that wearing face masks is what he calls weak science. Okay, so that's not obliged, but it's okay if that's what you want to do, but it's weak science. So there doesn't really seem to be a uniform view on anything that we're doing or trying to do. Nobody really seems to have any kind of sense of common agreement on this.
We were talking about it a little bit earlier. One of the big issues is, you know, if God forbid somebody gets ill and they go to their doctor, they are reasonably assured that that doctor has had a tremendous amount of training and experience in that illness. What's happening with this is that we are learning information while at the same time that the medical community is learning information. Now, they might obviously be better equipped and trained and skilled and able to understand the information better than we do. But the reality is that if I look at, and I use this as a measure, for the last 8 weeks, every Sunday, I've recorded a podcast with Dr. Anton Myberg. And what I can see, the amount of change and information that has developed and become known over this period is very, very interesting. And at the same time, I had a conversation with somebody in the weekend who said to me, you know, we need to watch this and see that, because we actually need to see, understand, you know, what the latest research and information is on this. And I said, actually, we don't. You know, we are not immunologists, we are not scientists, and we actually aren't equipped to be able to do that. So why are we cross-checking and referencing an article in the Washington Post versus something in the Daily Mail versus something that somebody sent us on WhatsApp to determine what is true? We are completely ill-equipped for it. But what it does show is that it's so new, and that's the point of this virus. It's a novel virus that the medical fraternity is learning information literally on a daily basis. And that means that there isn't going to be a standard protocol.
I think that that's absolutely right. We don't have much experience of any of this, not within the medical community. And as a result of that, we as individuals are being forced to make our own decisions, because the extent of guidance that we're getting from the people that we would normally turn to, the medical professionals, the people who have been trained for this, the extent of that guidance is very minimal, because even they don't know. There's so much trial and error going on. I mean, that's the best that I can, you know, describe, the best way that I can describe it is literally trial and error, because we don't have time to try things out, to get established views and to move on. We're having to use whatever we know right away, even if it doesn't have well-established science to support it. Even if there's some anecdotal evidence that, I don't know, a malaria tablet might reduce the extent of the virus. Well, let's try it out, because nobody really knows. And then we jump to conclusions about it, and then we discover that actually those conclusions might not necessarily be grounded in science. And so it's that's the way we're operating right now, because we're being forced to make decisions in a real-time world without having enough time to really assess what the effects of all of these things are. And that's what we feel our government is doing as well, even though they're trying to do the best possible job that they can. And because they've got so much pressure from the economic community and from the educational community and from parents and from children and from people who want to get back to their economic livelihoods, they're being forced to do things that otherwise they might choose not to have done. But because of economic realities, there are risks that are being taken now in order to return the economy back to some level of normal functioning.
And that's exactly how it is working here as well. Michael M says, I must say that watching the proceedings at the Israeli High Court yesterday on YouTube, I was very unimpressed by the design of the Israeli top courtroom, which reminds me of the Hillbrow Magistrate Court. They really must get a better courtroom. That's from Michael M. And Clive says, please tell us what's going on with the court in Israel regarding the elections. All right. So what are the details of this petition and where are we?
So the petition has been filed and is being heard by a full bench of 11 judges of the Israeli High Court. Each judge has been analyzed and assessed as to what their general position might be, what kind of a person they are, where they might fall on the political spectrum, in order to try to determine what they may decide with regard to this petition. Just to remind people who haven't been following it that closely, this is a petition that's been filed with the High Court of Justice to try to prevent Prime Minister Netanyahu from forming the next government, on the basis that he is currently under legal indictment for crimes that are pretty serious, including fraud and bribery and other misbehaviors, which are really unbecoming of a prime minister of Israel. And a group of people have filed this petition with the High Court. The High Court has agreed to hear the petition. Yesterday was the first day of a two-day hearing, which will continue today. The Attorney General has already made his pronouncement, which he did last week, and he was forced to do this by the court in spite of the fact that he was reluctant to do so. And he has come out legally arguing that in spite of the fact the Prime Minister is under indictment, that there is no legal reason why he cannot form the next government. And it seems as if, though, the High Court justices, judging at least from the questions that were being asked yesterday of the various legal teams, it seems as if, though, the High Court justices are also tending to adopt a similar kind of position. And the big argument that we have here is whether these 11 High Court justices are entitled to intervene with our democratic process. This is a huge question which is being asked, because let's not forget that we've had three rounds of elections during which time the general public, the democratic public of Israel has decided that Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud party is deserving of more votes than any other party, more support than any other party, in spite of the fact that everybody is well aware of the fact that he is currently under legal indictment. So the question is, do the judges have the right to intervene and say, well, even though the general public who knew, who had full information about these legal charges that are laid against him, even though they knew about that, they decided to vote him in. Do we now say, well, that democracy doesn't work because that's unbecoming of a prime minister. We're going to say he's not entitled to support, to form the government, and we're going to appoint somebody else. I mean, that's a huge democratic question that we need to ask ourselves. And as a result of that, there is the notion, there is the belief, there is the understanding probably that the court is not going to intervene on this matter. We won't know yet for another little while, because even though the hearing will conclude today, the decision won't be taken for probably another week or two. But it is a fascinating discussion that's taking place at the moment.
Yeah, very, very, and of course we will follow that to see exactly what is going on there. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you as always.